This is Talking Points, Kent's politics podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Points podcast. I'm your host Oliver Kemp and I'm joined as always by our political editor Paul Francis. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm very well, thanks Ollie, in the circumstances and all things considered.
Yes, and as I'm sure people will probably be able to tell by the quality of the recording, we're not actually in the same room today. We are practicing social distancing, which is obviously the jargon that we introduced a few weeks ago, which is now smashed into the mainstream. Yes. We're in our own homes, aren't we?
We are, and I'm surrounded by any number of cables. It's a bit like some kind of Mission Impossible thing. I feel I'm going to self-destruct any moment, but yes, we are, as you
Paul,
say.
People have called you the Tom Cruise of Kent Online, so whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know.
Probably not a good thing.
I mean, where do we start? You know, it's been one of the most intense couple of weeks probably any of us have ever experienced, as on top of being journalists as well and trying to cover the situation. So, I mean, just first off, Paul, what's it been like trying to cover everything that's been going on and keeping the public informed?
Well, you know, the weirdest thing is that when you talk to people about this whole crisis is the fact that, you know, they compare it to Brexit at the tail end of last year and the general election. That's almost as if that's been completely forgotten by everybody. And I think the fact that Brexit can be overshadowed by something like this is very telling.
Yeah, do you remember the days of Brexit? That it was almost quaint looking back.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. But you know, who's talking about Brexit now? I mean, I think there is a serious possibility that if the corona crisis doesn't get, if the government doesn't get on top of it in the timescale they want, then questions will start surfacing about, you know, hey, hold on a minute, what's happening to the UK's negotiations with the EU about Brexit, because there's just nothing, at least publicly, that appears to be going on there.
I mean, presumably everything else that's getting delayed or cancelled or postponed, then it's likely that those negotiations will have to as well. I mean, I don't know how people are supposed to start negotiations and when we're supposed to be practicing social distancing, borders are being closed, flights are cancelled. You know, that presumably how is that going to be feasible? Is it all going to be done through Google Hangouts? Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe, who knows? But you're right in as much as, you know, this is a global pandemic. Well, that's stating the obvious, obviously. It's not just us who are dealing with the problem. It's everywhere that's dealing with the problem. And I just think, you know, in the circumstances, getting I's dotted and T's crossed on EU negotiation and trade agreements is pretty distant.
Of course, the government right now will have a lot of other really important things to discuss. I mean, Dominic Raab was in the House of Commons earlier today talking about how there are hundreds of thousands of British nationals stuck abroad at the moment and they're working really hard to repatriate them and try and get them back home. People in Bali, in Peru, South Africa, lots of people stuck in Spain who went on holiday before the lockdowns happened. So they have got a big job on their hands, even just to get people back to the UK. I mean, that's a massive job, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the practicalities of the situation are huge and the challenge for governments, you know, in terms of what you were describing there, in terms of people stranded in countries where they don't want to be, is something that the government and the authorities have got to get a grip on. And while they're dealing with these very practical problems, that's not going to give much space for the politicians to talk about trade agreements.
And going from the national conversation, which everybody's pretty well versed in, to the local, I think it's quite interesting to see how different councils and different governments have to now start working together and working in different ways. And obviously, in terms of local councils, and we've talked about this a little bit, Paul, but they have quite a big job now to try and make sure that people stay apart and they respect this lockdown that's been imposed by the national government.
Yeah. And there are two sides to this in that councils, despite everything, are in the tricky situation of having to continue to provide, the various services like collecting your bins, dealing with planning applications, against a backdrop in which they're also expected to kind of implement some of these proposals that the government is introducing. So the workload of councils has actually grown as a result of the corona crisis in a way which, you know, none of them had anticipated. And I think one of the issues they're wrestling with now is that they've obviously had to cancel all their council meetings. So every district and borough council in Kent, county council and Medway Unitary Authority are no longer holding any meetings of councillors. And the question arises, okay, so you've gone into lockdown, but how are you going to continue to make the decisions that are needed to be taken on key frontline services?
Because it must be difficult to make those decisions at the best of times. But as long as you can get all the councillors into one room at a full council meeting, at least you have everybody there. But you can't host a 100-strong council meeting or digitally, can you? It doesn't sound very feasible at all.
No, it's not. The technological aspect of this is interesting because there are, you know, rules around transparency, openness, and accountability. And I've, you know, picked up from some councils that they're exploring kind of, as you said, you know, virtual meetings, hangouts, etc. But if they do that, where does the scrutiny of, you know, people like ourselves, the press, local press, come in? Because, you know, normally if we take an interest in a particular council meeting, we just go along to the council chamber, sit in and hear what the politicians have got to say, or tune into a webcast. How is that going to be arranged if councils go into some of these slightly more challenging ways of doing meetings through hangouts or sort of video conferencing?
Logistically very confusing, isn't it? Something that had been interesting as well, trying to see how these councils or how our local councils are trying to practice the social distancing, trying to respect those things. So obviously we had over the last few days, or yesterday we had the fact that this national lockdown has now kind of hit its zenith. You know, we shouldn't be going outside except for essential shopping or medical reasons or for a little bit of exercise. But prior to that, people were, you know, that it was maybe less reinforced. The message perhaps wasn't as clear from national government where how far you could take it, which is why we saw national parks staying open. And the whole thing got a little bit confused, didn't it?
It did. Classic example of, you know, councils trying to please two different audiences, if you like. Kent County Council has around 9 country parks dotted around the county, which it said it planned to keep open despite some of the restrictions that had previously been introduced. And that was at odds with neighbouring authorities like Essex County Council, which had closed all its public parks. And as you mentioned, the National Trust was forced into closing its parks and properties as a result of the current crisis. KCC kind of in a way stuck out or tried to maintain its position on public parks, and it still has in some senses. But at the beginning of the week, it was saying we're definitely keeping these country parks open. Then Boris Johnson comes on the TV, makes a public statement, and KCC's response to that is that the country parks will still be open, but only visitors who are arriving on foot or on horses, apparently, will be able to use them because they were closing all the car parks at the country parks. And, you know, given their nature, lots of people tend to visit by virtue of driving to the country park.
I don't know a single person who owns a horse, Paul.
Don't you?
I've got to be honest, no.
Off the top of my head, I don't either. But, you know, it may be the time to invest in a horse, you know, if you're keen on using country parks. Who knows?
I'm going to start looking at equine stocks and see if they start increasing over the next few months. That's interesting. Because also the other confusing thing was after KCC announced that their parks would stay open, very quickly Maidstone Borough Council announced that their parks would be closed. So there's quite two completely different responses there from the overarching county council and then a smaller borough council.
Yes. Another example of where councils are responding in different ways to government guidance or regulations or restrictions. And as you say, Maidstone Council put out a press notice saying it was closing all its parks pretty much on the same time as KCC was putting out a notice saying that they were going to keep theirs open. So it's understandable why residents feel a bit confused.
Yeah, although not understandable, and we did cover this on the Kent Online website, so some of you may have seen the story, that thousands of revellers of the sun turned up in Whitstable at the weekend.
Yes.
All packed in like sardines to enjoy the sun, which obviously is completely against this whole idea of making sure we stay apart and try not to spread this virus. I think they were actually branded idiots on our website, which fairly accurate, to be honest.
I think there was a hashtag COVID idiots began trending at one point. But as you say, we've seen this and are continuing to see some of this kind of group gatherings, either by virtue of, you know, people on tube trains in London, which if you've seen some of the pictures today, indicate that people have just not taking on board that message that they've got to be, is it 3 meters apart?
I think it's two, maybe.
As you know, the weekend, the sun comes out, and lots of people pile down to places like Whitstable for a day in the sun, albeit quite cold, and draw the, you know, rightfully the kind of criticism that has been made of people ignoring the government's advice.
I mean, the public transport one in London is an interesting one, because on the flip side of saying people aren't listening to the advice and they're still getting on tube trains, if your job is not protected and you need to pay your bills, then you have no choice but to travel on the underground to go to work if you're working in London. And this is, I guess, the problem with what Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, announced last week was quite unprecedented in the fact that 80% of wages will be paid to employees through businesses that would be struggling through this crisis. That doesn't include self-employed people. Self-employed people would still need to apply for universal credit. Or I think maybe they were talking about statutory sick pay, but that's £94 a week, which is obviously not enough to live on for most people. So these people don't really have a lot of the time don't have a choice. I mean, just anecdotally, my girlfriend, she works for a car rental company who are considered an essential service because they sometimes put cars out to emergency services and key workers. So everybody that works in that company is having to travel into work, be that by their own car or public transport, and deal with the public and deal with those people. So there are people out there that are basically, they have no choice.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, if you had the time or inclination to interview a carriage full of people on a London Underground train, they would probably say exactly that. Which suggests there are kind of some intransigent employers around, and illustrates also the fact that the government has got a real problem on its hands, because some of these people will probably be in jobs which are designated as ones where the new restrictions don't apply. So again, it does indicate that the government has got a very tricky job to handle in terms of making sure that everything's done to minimise the risk of infection.
I spoke to, speaking about businesses and employment as well, I spoke to Councillor Alex Paterson of Rochester West yesterday after, and if you've seen the Cineworld Action Group, so this is the group of employees who lost their jobs from the Cineworld cinema chain, about 4 or 5 days prior to the Chancellor announcing this 80% wage payment. So a lot of people unceremoniously sacked. It was called like a mass sacking, basically.
Yeah.
Now this action group is saying, well, now that this has come in, maybe you can bring us back in and so we can get these 80% wages, so we're not all going to be out looking for jobs and failing to pay our wages. I mean, Councillor Paterson was saying how saw it as pretty much a disgrace, and how perhaps after this pandemic we might think about the certain businesses that we patronise. Maybe we won't feel like going to Cineworld because they treat their staff so badly. And similarly, a company like Wetherspoons, who have recently said they won't be paying any staff past the 22nd of March, and they're now out struggling to pay their mortgages and pay their bills.
Yeah, I mean, I think this again is something the government's got to address with some urgency. it's announced these plans, and the one thing you do hear is that employers and others have no current way in which they can apply for some of these dispensations. And I think, you know, given that some kind of businesses are in a fairly perilous position, that is something which needs to be a kind of key priority for the government, because until those dispensations come in and the government details what its arrangements are going to be and what you have to do, there will be more decisions by employers along the lines that we've seen from this cinema chain and to Wetherspoons.
I wonder if anything will come out of this this whole situation positively, for certainly for people who are having to claim universal credit, because I've seen a lot of things on social media where people that are now all of a sudden having to claim universal credit are saying, oh my God, this 5 week wait is insane and £94 a week is not enough to live on. And some people are saying, well, that's been the case for years now, but it's not been addressed. And maybe the fact that now more people are having to be pushed towards that universal credit system, it might be thought about in terms of, does this actually work and is this enough money to live off?
Yeah, it's the kind of law of unintended consequences in some ways, isn't it? You know, you're right in that, you know, the discussion around universal credit has led people to take an interest in it who previously would not have taken an interest in it. You know, along with the 80% payment of employees' salaries for 3 months, it's a question of, okay, where's the detail? How do we go about getting it?
I suppose it's going to be a long time before we get all this information now. As you kind of, our conversation's gone full circle, really, hasn't it? We're not sure when this information is going to come, because everything's going to be so backlogged now in terms of getting legislation through, sorting things out, and just getting general conversations going about how we push forward.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things that we're seeing in the last 24 hours or so is some politicians querying aspects of the new kind of arrangements for, you know, new impositions on people to stay in their own homes. Tom Tugendhat, the Tunbridge and Morling MP, who's chairman of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, raised a point in the Commons yesterday, which was quite interesting. He said, you know, this is legislation we need, but he was articulating concerns around the fact that it might, in his words, used for malicious purposes were it to be extended into other areas of everyday life. And I think that was a reference to, you know, the new powers to the police and other authorities to detain, fine people for breaches of the new impositions.
What's difficult, though, isn't it, that if people don't pay attention to this idea that we should be staying in our homes and they still want to go out, I mean, there's very little else you can push to. It feels like pushing to giving police powers is one step down from giving the army powers and going to martial law. You know, there's very little else you can do, because you can't expect councils to be able to police it themselves, can you? So it puts them in a very difficult position.
Yeah, absolutely. And even the police, you know, flagged up some concerns about the kind of challenges that these new restrictions are going to place on forces. And I spoke to the chairman of the Kent Police Federation earlier, who said, you know, the policemen and men and women will always do what's required of them and are flexible and adaptable. But it was, you know, the idea that the police might arrest or detain or fine two people who weren't sort of sufficiently far away from one another, that they were in breach of the 2 meter rule. He said that just was, you know, that was not going to happen.
Yeah, that's it's difficult to imagine that even being enacted, isn't it? I mean, I think we've probably covered quite a lot today. But what we would usually do is we'd go through a little bit of jargon of the week. But I kind of feel like, since we began with this, and we started with social distancing a few weeks ago, which is now a term of vocabulary that's now well within all of us, and we all understand what that means completely, don't we?
Yeah, it's word of the year, or phrase of the year, or will be by the time December comes around, or January.
What a depressing phrase of the year that's going to be.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, it's kind of, as you say, accepted kind of commonplace phrase now that, you know, people talk about every day, and has, you know, crossed over to the mainstream from the jargonese fraternity.
It has. Well, let's hope that not more of the jargon that we've talked about on this podcast comes alive and comes into the mainstream, because some of it is pretty awful. But we will be back again next week with some more jargon. We're going to be doing these, our own social distancing talking points podcasts, over the next few weeks to keep everyone informed and keep discussing what's going on in local councils and in politics. But thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you soon. See you later, Paul.
Cheers, Ollie. See you soon.
Talking Points, Kent's politics podcast.